The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Yeah, welcome everybody, tokers and tokettes and supporters of liberty everywhere. It is Thursday, June 21st, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad you could join us on this last day of the week before we head out on our massive road trip to San Francisco, or more accurately, Richmond, California, for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup 2012. It's going to be a rocking good time. Joining us on the trip, we'll have Wiz Calico. How you doing, Calico?
Aloha, doing quite well. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast.
Oh, yeah. We'll be bringing you live coverage at ncr420.com. You can catch it all weekend long from noon to 10. And then tomorrow, we are going to have live shows coming to you 2 hours later, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific. We are going to be bringing you a live edition of this show, the Russ Belville Show and Toker Talk Radio. And then an hour after we end that show, Herb Thrasher is in San Francisco with us to join us for a live edition of Normal Rocks with Herb Thrasher. All right, we're having some problems with the webcams. We'll get to those in just a second. But first, let's talk to Ganja John hanging out there over on the side. How's it going, John?
How are you doing, Russ?
I am doing fine. How are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you doing,
Calico?
Oh,
I'm doing fine. How is Calico doing?
I'm doing quite wonderful. It's so beautiful outside.
It's a beautiful summertime here, and we are just itching to get down there to San Francisco.
Driving more importantly, late. How is Carrie doing?
Let's go to our news editor, Cannabis Carrie, out there. Carrie, how are you doing?
Well, I want to thank our sound engineer for remembering the important things. How am I doing? It's great out here today.
Carrie's got our headlines for us in the Daily Cannabis Chronicle, and we bring that to you every weekday, the top three headlines in marijuana law reform. And you can get a podcast download of that. You know, if you don't always have the time for the whole show, you can get just the news in a nice, fresh, less than 6 minute podcast. Just get it from newscast.radicalrust.com. Carrie, what do we have in headlines today?
We've got a couple of breaking news stories. We've got to tell you about the fate of an East Coast bill. We've also got to tell you about that heated exchange between a Colorado representative and the head of the DEA. And I'm also going to tell you about the trouble that one marijuana group, a medical marijuana group no less, has had time in trying to find some vending space. That's all coming up on today's Cannabis Chronicles.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that, and you'll get my opinions on that as well. I was overlooking some of those stories, and pretty disgusting story coming out of that, but we'll talk about that coming up in the news. Also today, we've got Groovin' Thursday, Daily Toker Tunes, and on today's show, we are going to bring you some music from not just any Homo sapien, not even just a funky Homo sapien, but the funky Homo sapien. That's right, Del the funky Homo sapien from Hieroglyphics Imperium. Like you're saying, Bay Area talent. He's going to be there at the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. We're going to play one of his tunes, Funk'em, coming up on today's show. So check that out.
Funk'em.
And then at half past, we are going to be speaking with Robert Wolf from OMPI, the I-24 initiative to get a constitutional amendment to legalize marijuana in Oregon. We've got some breaking news on that we're going to talk to him about on the signature gathering. And then at the end of the show, 45 after, we're visiting with the guys from The theweedblog.com, one of our partners here in marijuana media, theweedblog.com. We'll be right here in studio. Plus, we'll take your calls an hour or two at 971-533-7111. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show right here on National Cannabis Radio, NCR420.com. Tell your friends to follow at NCR420 this weekend to get all of the updates from the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. We'll have videos, we'll have panels, we'll have all sorts of fun, so check it out. We're back right after this, so stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Well, I say little recollect, darling, your mud's too fierce. Little recollect, you need a love that's gonna lay.
And blue blasting gurgin, fuffin dir blasting schnurb norb.
Help us legalize it. Text NCC to 420-420 and send $10 to the National Cannabis Coalition. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Indeed, New Hampshire's Democratic governor is at least a man of his word. Governor John Lynch vetoed a bill that would have legalized medical marijuana in his state, as he promised he would if it was made it to his desk. This is the second time that the New Hampshire Governor John Lynch got to veto such legislation. A bill similar to this year's medical marijuana bill made it to his desk back in 2009. Both bills would have allowed a person with a doctor's recommendation to be allowed to possess marijuana and grow it for themselves as long as they were on a state registry. Lynch says that allowing patients to grow their own marijuana would lead to an unlimited number of cultivation sites, which he contends would make it impossible to control distribution and prevent illegal use of marijuana. Now, this is the third loss for cannabis law reformers in New Hampshire this year. Earlier, a decrim bill did not make it out of the Senate that would have changed the existing law in the state from any possession of marijuana being a criminal offense punishable by up to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine to possession of less than 14 grams of marijuana punishable by just a $250 ticket. That didn't pass. There was also a legalization bill that didn't make it out of either chamber. Governor Lynch had promised to veto the decrim bill and the legalization bill as well if either of them had made it to his desk.
Well, you know, like you mentioned, this was expected from Governor Lynch, and I believe in the House it got through with a veto-proof majority, but in the Senate they weren't quite there. Do you recall what the vote was in the Senate there, Carrie? I don't think they had veto-proof, though.
Oh, it was a couple hundred to 89, so it got blown away in the Senate.
Yeah. So it doesn't look like they'll be able to go past the governor being the roadblock once again to any sort of meaningful marijuana law reform in the Granite State. It's just sad. I mean, since 2007, they've managed to get medical marijuana through a couple of times now and have it vetoed by this one guy, a Democrat, John Lynch, who just cannot see what he's doing, or maybe he does, I don't know, but he can't see what impact this has on the citizens of his state. People that are in pain, people that are suffering, people that are in danger of being treated like criminals, arrested, losing their homes, losing their families, put in a cage all over their use of this therapeutic herb. And this is not, it's just not acceptable anymore. I mean, Governor Lynch's fears, every time this comes up, he tries to bring up the bogeyman fears of what terrible things will happen if medical marijuana is enacted. It ain't 1996 anymore, Governor Lynch. You can't really come up with that as an excuse anymore when the states around you in the New England area have medical marijuana or decriminalization, and the sky hasn't fallen there. The West Coast, we have a wide tolerance of marijuana use, even non-medical use out here, and yet the trains still run on time. We still have businesses that flourish. We still have kids that go to school. I mean, the world doesn't come to an end. You're behind the curve on this, Governor Lynch, as most politicians are. A majority of Americans now support not just medical marijuana, not just carving out some exception to prosecution if someone's too sick to put them in a cage, but outright legalization of marijuana for all adults. We realize that trying to stop people from doing things we don't like causes more harm than just trying to recognize what they do and come up with some reasonable regulations and controls for this. It's just time to legalize it. Get past it, Governor Lynch. People of New Hampshire, do something. Vote this guy out of office. Get something changed here so that we can get some meaningful marijuana law reform up there in New Hampshire. The people there deserve it.
Now, we talked about this in Hour 2 yesterday, what the Comic-Con people would say if National Cannabis Radio asked for a vending booth to cover the event. Now, we don't know what the answer to that is, but the Alabama Medical Marijuana Coalition knows that the answer is no for them to vend at the popular Del Mar Days Music Festival that will be held this Saturday on the campus of the Athens State University. The group had already been accepted for the Del Mar Days Music Festival and had already paid the booth space fee, so today's cancellation was a surprise to them. Jeanette Dunavant, the president of the Tourism Association in Athens, said that she first accepted the application to vend from the Alabama Medical Coalition because she didn't immediately realize that the group she was accepting was promoting marijuana use. She also said upon further review that the organization did not meet the festival standards of having items that they were selling. She said that their application was misleading since they were giving away t-shirts and bracelets. She said the festival required that they sell items. She also says that the rule is you can't give away anything but information. Now, when asked if they sold the t-shirts instead of giving them away, if they would be allowed to attend, and she said that since Del Mar Days caters to senior citizens and is family-oriented, the Marijuana Coalition would not be appropriate for the event. Athens Mayor Ronnie Marks, as well as the Athens State University President Bob Glenn, have both supported Dunavant's decision, but both offices say that they did not have any role in the Tourism Board's decision to exclude the medical marijuana group. The Alabama Medical Marijuana Coalition has had other trouble getting vending space at events this year. According to their website, they have been turned down for vending space at the Auburn City Fest, the Arab Poke Salad Festival, and the Pell City Hometown Block Party, and the Alabaster City Fest.
Yeah, this is, you know, once again, rank discrimination. I'm sure there's a beer garden there at the Music Fest. I'm sure you'll be able to get some booze in you if you're out there at the Music Fest. I'm sure there'll be people smoking cigarettes out there at the Music Fest. And I'm sure senior citizens and children might see them do it. But no, we can't have people out there talking about medical marijuana, merely presenting the information about medical use of marijuana. For one thing, we can't have old people knowing that they could use medical marijuana. We can't have seniors realizing that they could get rid of half of their pills by growing a houseplant. It'd give them something interesting to do and also help them therapeutically. We can't have them knowing that. We can't have children realizing that we've been lying to them, been telling them lies about what marijuana is going to do to them and that the people that use marijuana are bad and evil and can't be associated with. It's really about controlling hearts and minds here, and that's why this Alabama touristy thing doesn't want to see medical marijuana there vending with everyone else. And I'm sure, you know, if we looked through the list of vendors, we could find all sorts of other examples of things that some people might find offensive or unworthy for children there. They're always going to come up with some excuse to ban us. And it once again shows how we live under a second-class citizenship with medical marijuana in this country. And it just doesn't go far enough. We've got to get the right for us to do with our bodies what we choose, recognize so we no longer face this kind of discrimination.
And the head of the Drug Enforcement Administration was grilled by Colorado Democrat Representative Jared Polis yesterday. Michelle Leonhardt refused to answer a number of questions about the dangers of marijuana from Polis, as he repeatedly asked her if heroin, crack, and methamphetamine was more harmful to one's health than marijuana. The DEA head finally answered Polis's question that he repeatedly asked over and over, that yes, the properties of heroin did make it more addictive than marijuana, but she stayed fast on her point that all illegal drugs are a danger to one's health. Polis even pointedly asked her to please answer a yes, no, or an I don't know to his question. She stayed with her all drugs are bad statement. Leonhardt was testifying in front of a House Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Tourism, and Terrorism and Homeland Security. The hearing was a standard oversight hearing on the DEA, but with the recent news of the Attorney General Eric Holder being held in contempt over refusing to hand over every document that references his Operation Fast and Furious, the meeting was more contentious than normal. Criticism of the Fast and Furious operation, a program that allowed guns to be sold to Mexican gang members in an effort to track them, has been the subject of hearings on the Justice Department since Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was shot with one of the weapons that were purchased under that plan. The Justice Department, which withheld most of the information at first, has confessed that they lost track of hundreds, if not thousands, of weapons, including military assault rifles. The scandal has reached the Justice Department, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the DEA, the FBI, and even the Office of the President, as President Obama claimed executive privilege for the first time to suppress internal documents related to the operation. Leonhardt was also questioned about the DEA's activities in Colombia. The DEA has permanent offices in Colombia, and members are looking into possible misconduct by Colombian-based agents after the Secret Service were found to be visiting prostitutes when they were there. The DEA currently has a budget of $2.02 billion. That's with a B, and that's annually, $2.02 billion, and has nearly 5,000 special agents in employment. I think we do have a piece of her testimony today. Russ, do we have that?
Yeah, running it here in the background, and we're going to play the entire testimony in hour two, but I just wanted to give you a clip of this to wind up our news segment here to give you an idea what we're up against. This is Representative Jared Polis from Colorado, who's questioning DEA Administrator Michelle Leonhardt. And remember, she's the woman who claimed that the Mexicans being slaughtered was a signpost of success that showed that the drug traffickers were acting like caged animals. And after saying something like that, President Obama nominated her to take the position she'd held since the Bush administration. Check out some of her obfuscation and dodging in this clip.
Your top priority, I believe you indicated to us, is abuse of prescription drugs. Is one of the main classifications of prescription drugs painkillers that you're concerned about?
That's correct.
And are those painkillers addictive?
Yes, they are. Very addictive.
Are those painkillers more addictive than marijuana?
All illegal drugs are in Schedule 1, are addictive.
Well, again, this is a health-based question, and I know you're obviously you have a law enforcement background, but I'm sure you're also familiar, given your position, with the science of the matter. And I'm asking, you know, again, clearly your agency has established abuse of prescription drugs as the top priority. Is that, therefore, an indication that prescription drugs are more addictive than marijuana?
All illegal drugs are addictive.
Okay, your agency has established abuse of prescription drugs as its top priority. You've indicated as much to us. Does that mean that abuse of prescription drugs is a greater threat to the public health than marijuana?
Because it's an emerging threat, because people are turning to prescription drugs then faster than any other drug, that is why we prioritize it.
Well, in many states, including my home state of Colorado, we have a legalized and regulated regime of medical marijuana, and we have found some great degree of success in combating the abuse of prescription drugs by making sure that patients have access to medical marijuana, which the science indicates, and I would certainly encourage you to look at the science, is less addictive and less harmful to human health than some of the narcotic prescription drugs that are abused, and also when they're used on label, they can be very harmful to health as well. Would your agency consider supporting medical marijuana provisions when that can be used in pursuit of your top priority, which is reducing abuse of prescription drugs, if it can be documented that the use of medical marijuana helps reduce the abuse of prescription drugs? Is that something you're willing to pursue?
Well, Congress has determined that marijuana is a controlled substance, and DEA is tasked with enforcing.
Yeah, but you mentioned priorities, though, and you said top priority, reducing abuse of prescription drugs. One tactic to do that would be use of medical marijuana. And I wanted to make sure, again, top priority, in pursuit of your top priority, are you willing to look at the use of medical marijuana?
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, yeah. We just don't know. Prescription drugs, heroin, meth, coke, marijuana. We just don't know. We don't know which one's more harmful. I'm the head of the DEA, and I just don't know. Don't know. But they're just all bad. They're all illegal. We just got to ban them all. They're all bad. Be right back with Groovin' Thursday. Dell, the funky homie of Sleepian, is next.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Fire it up. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Bully boy's a man. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Flame on, flame on. Get the light up. If you burn bugs. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, we are so looking forward to getting down to the San Francisco High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, and the performer in this next song is going to be there performing. Is it Saturday night, guys? I think it's Saturday night that's happening.
I believe so.
Yeah, yeah. Del the Funky Homo Sapien from Hieroglyphics Imperium. John and Calico probably could tell you more about them than I can. John, what you got on Del?
Just Hieroglyphics.
Just Hieroglyphics?
Hieroglyphics Imperium is the name of the label.
The label.
Oh, gotcha. So Hieroglyphics is
the co-op kind of, yeah, is what we're trying to say. But yeah, it's Dell is going to be there Saturday night, probably playing. I've been listening to a lot of Deltron 3030 in the car just to get ready for it.
Yeah. Dell's from Oakland, California. He's actually the cousin of Ice Cube.
Yeah, yes. You were telling me that the other day. Yeah,
that's how he got to start rapping. So. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, people may know his voice from the Gorillaz tracks that he did. Any other groups that he's performed with that we...
Oh, he's been all over. He guests on everything.
If you know hip-hop, you know Dell the Funky Homo. Absolutely. For sure.
All right, well, let's just get right to it, because it's time for some Groovin' Thursday. This is Dell, the Funky Homo Sapien, with Funk'em, baby! On your Groovin' Thursday Daily Toker Tunes, get your downloads at music.radicalrust.com.
I'm looking at the clock on the wall, and the time's not pausing or stopping at all. I ain't trying to be pompous at all. When I say that my goals, I can accomplish them all. Sometimes I gotta walk through the fog. The fog representing those who want you to fall.
My success may make them feel small, saying that it's real far, that ain't real at all. Little by little, it'll build a foundation, tied and bound together by sound basics. So Dell's never found walk around hating. That'll be a waste of time while I'm watching others make it. I ain't in a rush for no dollars. I'm doing all this to deliver y'all a dope product. But always dudes who don't believe, talking about it's not supposed to be. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. They call me the funky homo sapien, cause I walk around with zero patience in the whole earth's surface population. Cause a lot of these cats won't stop the hating. One of my homies had dreams of doing what he do, but his folks said he couldn't do it. Took it as a joke, told him that it's stupid. It got to my man, now he through with it. Yo, I'ma be the one that'll give support, cause everybody got something that they living for. I told him, tell them fools that it isn't yours, and what you got to show for is sitting on the corner. Constructive criticism, I'm all for it. The hateful statements is not important. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Back. A lot of cats feel that it's nothing to rap. Production is nothing but stuff from the past. Well, here's a little something to get in that ass. What I do is a continuation of all the great music that Blacks was making. Always those who would say it's Nathan turn right around with an adaptation. Silly, we could recognize the real from fake it. Roblox won't stop, we gon' make it. Next time someone say your dreams is bold, dad, say you got something for they ass. And when it all unfold, in fact, just remember I told you that. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Mother, fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face. Fuck 'em, just to see the look on their face.
That's right, Del the Funky Homo Sapien. I am Ganja Libre. We're getting ready for San Francisco High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. You can get your tickets still at medcancup.com if you want to go. We want to see you there. But if we don't see you there, check out our coverage at ncr420.com. We'll be there all weekend long. ncr420.com, National Cannabis Radio. When we come back, we'll have Robert Wolf on the phone from the Oregon Marijuana Policy Initiative and Citizens for Sensible Law Enforcement, talking about the constitutional amendment to legalize marijuana in the state of Oregon. There's been bad polling, bad signature gathering news. We'll talk to him about that and more coming up next.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
A Attention, national cannabis radio listeners. If you haven't heard the political pontifications of Lively and Mr. Libra on the Libra Lounge yet, be sure to visit here Wednesday nights at 6 Pacific or visit thelibralounge.com for archives and links to download current episodes. Be a lounger.
The Libra Lounge.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, folks, we got a special guest here for the activist agenda, a man who's been trying to get a constitutional amendment voted on here in the state of Oregon to legalize the use of marijuana, personal, private, adult use in the home. And Robert Wolf from the Citizens for Sensible Law Enforcement's joining us. Robert, how you doing?
Good, Russ. Thanks. I'm glad to be on your show.
You know, we had just done some reporting on the early turn-in verification numbers on signature gathering here in Oregon. We reported on both the statutory initiative, OCTA, and OMPI's initiative, the constitutional amendment. Both of them came in with pretty low numbers as far as turn-in validity, in the low 50s. Can you explain what's going on there and if there's any ways to rectify that situation?
Well, those validity numbers are historically low and shocking, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And it has become clear to me that the Secretary of State, Kate Brown, has instituted policies that seek to aggressively exclude every possible signature on the basis of quite a few pretexts, many of which are capricious and arbitrary. And I think that's the wrong attitude for that office to take. They should be supporting the citizenry's attempts to access the ballot through this time-honored tradition and should thus be allowing every possible signature, even if they have to bend over backwards to do it. I think that it displays an attitude of contempt for the voters and the signers of these petitions, and frankly, it's got me pretty hot under the collar.
Mm-hmm. So it's your contention here that the Secretary of State is applying a stricter scrutiny to your initiative and possibly the other initiatives regarding marijuana than they do for, say, a tax thing or a casino thing or some other initiative?
Well, I'm not going to say that. I think that they're probably applying their formula evenly to all the initiatives, but their policies are making it much, much harder for average people to access the political process this way. Mm-hmm. They're out there changing their own internal rules, not the laws, but their own rules that they set, so that they can disqualify more and more signatures every year. And I think that's unreasonable. It's anti-democratic. No way for the Democratic Party of Oregon to behave, and Kate Brown of the Secretary of State's office is supposedly a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some challenges that we can mount. I'm currently investigating what kind of legal action we can take to get a judge to agree with us and help us make the ballot. Some of the signatures, for example, were disqualified because the voter had moved within the same county and thus was automatically made inactive and thus ineligible to sign a petition. Well, that's a recent rule change. In the past, if they had moved within the same county, then they were allowed to still sign petitions and still vote with their ballot. They weren't automatically removed from the rolls of active voters.
So let me get this straight on this, Robert. Sorry to interrupt you, but like in 2010, when we had the Measure 74 that made the ballot, that kind of rule wasn't in place. If you moved, you could still get your signature in.
I believe 2010 is when they implemented this new rule. As a matter of fact.
Okay.
So it was in effect for that cycle and this cycle, but I wasn't. The petition that I'm sponsoring wasn't affected by it then.
Okay.
And there's other things. If the circulator who filled up the petition sheet signs their signature a little differently from an example signature they file with the state, then the entire sheet of 10 signatures is automatically disqualified. And for a minor clerical error on behalf of, what is essentially a young minimum wage worker, to disenfranchise 10 voters at a time who signed a petition, I find that outrageous.
But if this rule was in effect in 2010, though, and this other rule was effect in 2010, and the Measure 74 was able to make the ballot, what differences happened? I mean, is it just that we had two initiatives at the same time, or was there a difference in how we're gathering signatures?
Well, you know, I don't think it's a difference in how we're gathering signatures. I do believe that the rules have been evolving and changing and being applied in a stricter way with an eye towards removing as many signatures as possible. Exactly how that has come to be is something we're actually investigating right now. Russ, I'm taking a fairly extraordinary step of organizing a team of lawyers representing various chief petitioners across a spectrum of issues. And it is my plan to wield this team of lawyers against the Secretary of State's office to change the way that they are invalidating these signatures so that everybody has freer and more fair access to the democratic process this way. I believe that if we continue to gather signatures and we can prove to a judge that these disqualifications were capricious and arbitrary and against the voters' interests, that we still have a chance to make the ballot.
We're speaking with Robert Wolf, who's the chief petitioner behind the I-24 legalization amendment here in the state of Oregon. And that brings up another question here. Given that we have such a climate here of trying to disqualify voters and signatures, why go for a constitutional amendment that requires so many more valid signatures?
Well, you know, that's a good point. And the initial reasoning, Russ, is that we wanted to put the very, very basic question of should adults get into criminal trouble for personal marijuana use in the Constitution so that the legislature couldn't muck about with it. We know from our own past that the legislature will change the laws, and if Republicans, for example, were ever in charge, we could not count on them to preserve, that right, even if the voters approved it. So we just wanted to put it out of reach of legislative shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And historically, we were planning on 65% validity, which historically is the lowest validity petitions ever came up with in the past. And if we had gotten that very low, historically low validity rate, we'd be on the ballot because we have enough signatures to qualify at that level of validity. However, we have reached a new historical low validity because of the policies and practices of this Secretary of State's election division. That's what I'm objecting to. By all history we know, we should have qualified for the ballot with the number of signatures that we have on hand, and we didn't, and that's a problem.
All right, so as far as the signature validation goes, of course, there's all sorts of things in it that I've always kind of found anti-democratic. The idea that one bad signature can spoil 10 seems kind of undemocratic. The idea that we're only polling a statistical sample of some of the signatures seems to me something that now in the electronic age we should be able to rectify, to be able to actually count all votes in it. I mean, we don't determine the president by sampling, let's just take 1,000 of the votes that we found nationwide and figure out how it turned out. We count all the votes. So,
the old electoral college, but I hear you.
Yeah.
The statistical sampling, the lawyers tell me, is fixed in law and is unlikely to change. And the highest courts in the land have said that's okay to do. But that does make it a matter of luck of the draw. One of the policies that I find very obnoxious is if they find one duplicate signature, they disqualify 400 additional signatures. So we had 33 duplicates in our sample, and that means they disqualified over 13,000 signatures total for us based on duplicates. That's luck of the draw. We don't go for duplicate signatures. We warn signers to not sign twice. But if they had chosen a couple of other sheets that didn't have duplicates on it, just as a matter of chance, then we would have had 13,000 more signatures make the cut, and that would have been extremely helpful. So, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of ways they go after these signatures, and I think that it should be the opposite. If it's the intent of the voter is clear that they wanted to sign this petition and have their signature count, the elections division should bend over backward to make it count. That's their job, not disqualifying signatures and keeping citizens away from their use of the initiative process.
How much of duplicate signatures do you think could be attributed to people thinking, oh, there's two of them out there, I think I signed this one, or maybe I didn't, the whole situation of having two initiatives competing at the same time?
Well, I think that the fact that we were gathering for two initiatives at one time in Oregon, and that we weren't really mounting much of a PR campaign to differentiate them in the eyes of the voters definitely has affected both campaigns. And, it's been my goal and will remain my goal to have a unified industry organization in this state for cannabis issues. And hopefully we will avoid that kind of conflict or problem in the past. I'm not against OCTA. I think OCTA is a great proposal, but I do think that there was some confusion in the minds of the voters. And if by some, at this point, frankly, miracle, we both get on the ballot, we're going to have to work hard to make sure the voters understand the differences between the two, both their strengths and the differences between them.
All right, let's talk about miracles and look forward here. The turn-in deadline is July 6th, and just judging from what the Secretary of State has told us are the currently valid signatures, OCTA is needing some 30,000. I think yours was needing some 50 or 60,000 to qualify. You've been collecting signatures since the May 25th when we did the early turn-in. What are we looking forward to as far as this last effort to get some more signatures?
Well, we have continued to hire. We have circulators out now. We have combined forces with OCTA to some degree so that all of the best circulators for both petitions are now carrying both petitions. And these are the most productive people that each of the teams has. And so we're working together in that way to maximize signature collection. We're going to be able to get enough signatures to show that, except for the actions of the Secretary of State, we would have qualified for the ballot. And that's the information we're going to take into court with us. We're also busy contacting every voter whose signature was disqualified from our petition. And we're going to ask them, did you mean for your signature to count, even though your signature was illegible, or even though you moved, or even though one of these other problems exist? And we're going to have them all sign statements saying, yes, we're going to go to court with that too. In this way, we hope to get the assistance of the court system to overturn the capricious and arbitrary actions of the Secretary of State's office and put our initiative on the ballot.
Yeah, and so that's, I guess, the outcome we're looking for. But I'm wondering, you know, in the length of how long these court cases and appeals and such take, would there be a ruling in time that would say by November be able to get this on the ballot? Or would the remedy perhaps be to put it on a later ballot? Or would we possibly just end up with some rule changes and have to go through the whole petitioning process again?
You know, I think all of those are potential outcomes. Our goal, of course, and what we're going to argue for is that we should be on the November ballot because under historical and normal circumstances, we've collected enough signatures to qualify, and it is only the capricious and arbitrary policies of the Elections Division that resulted in a historically low validity number that has kept us off the ballot, and we hope a judge agrees with our objections to the various ways they invalidate signatures. We have a council that is very experienced and believes we have a very strong, credible challenge to mount here, and so that's what we're going to do. If all things don't work out exactly right, then, yeah, it's going to be very hard for I-24 to make the ballot this year. Will we try again? That's hard to say. A lot of money went into this campaign, and it was the most professionalized and mainstream campaign run to date in Oregon on this issue. Can the funders absorb, you know, that kind of financial hit without making the ballot and then come back to do it again? I don't know.
All right. All right. And, you know, you mentioned that this is I-24, OCTA is I-9. That kind of implies to me that there's some other numbers in between. Have you heard from any other chief petitioners of other issues out there that are having the same historically low numbers, or is this just happening to marijuana initiatives?
Well, we're going to see that very soon. The two marijuana initiatives were the second and third initiatives to send signatures in for validation. And so we got those results back first. But others have turned in since, and we're eagerly awaiting the results to see just how that plays out. But I have been in contact with all of the chief petitioners of all the measures that are active in this cycle, both conservative and liberal causes. And I am recruiting all of them to come on board this legal effort as co-plaintiffs to challenge the Secretary of State's policies. You know, for me, Russ, we want to make sure citizens have access to the ballot this way. We don't want to seek to exclude them. We want to seek to facilitate them. These rules were all originally put in place in order to combat abuse of the ballot box by anti-tax zealot Bill Sizemore, you know, back some years ago. But now it's coming back to bite us all on the rear, even if we're on the left or even if we believe in the democratic process. And it's resulting in a system where it takes too much money to get on the ballot, too much work and too much money. And it moves this whole thing into the realm of simply wealthy people and out of the reach of ordinary people. And in that way, it stifles political speech. That's another aspect of our argument here.
Yeah, you know, I've had that same argument myself. It's with Citizens United, it seems we can spend unlimited money when it's their side. But when it's our side, we can't pay per signature. We can't. There's all sorts of restrictions they don't have to play by. Robert, this is all the time we got for this segment. But Robert Wolf from Citizens for Sensible Law Enforcement, I-24's legalization amendment. You can check him out on the web at endprohibitionagain.com. Robert, thanks for joining us today.
Congratulations on the new show, Rob.
Thank you. We'll be right back with the Weed Blog in the house. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Pirates here.
The cannabis community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Community Chat.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 48 after the hour, we are joined here by Jay Smoker and Johnny Green. Johnny Green, who is just puffing, and Jay Smoker, who's about to smoke, here from theweedblog.com, the fastest growing, highest ranked marijuana blog out there. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good, man.
So when did the Weed Blog launch?
January 2010. First blog post was January 7th, 2010.
Wow. And since then, it's just gone off the hook as far as the web hits and everything. Give us some idea where you're at.
Somewhere
It depends on who you follow. Google Analytics, which anyone in the industry knows, it's a little bit off. Somewhere around, you know, 750,000 page views a month.
Ooh.
But other ones we see, you know, when you get a little more accurate totals, we're looking at around 1.5, somewhere in there. It's real hard to tell because you don't want to count things that aren't real, you know?
Right, right. That's always been a problem, you know, when people come to me and they're asking me, well, how many people watch the show? And I'm like, well, live, downloads, podcasts, flash players, you know, hard to tell sometimes, but all right, so still tons and tons of traffic coming over theweedblog.com. And as far as your coverage of the different events in the cannabis community, you're headed down to San Francisco with us. Is this your first event, or how has this been for you as far as covering events?
Actually, this will be our third Cannabis Cup. We were down in L.A., is actually where I met Calico. We've actually lived parallel lives, you know.
Absolutely.
Most of the years and whatnot.
We both went to Western Oregon University. That's basically
that hotbed of socialism.
Absolutely.
That's what they say. Or as we say down in Monmouth, the Harvard of Polk County.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah, that's how we do.
Western Oregon.
And we come from the Harvard School of Government over there.
That's right.
Heck yeah. But yeah, we went to the LA Cup and we went to the Denver Cup. We've been to, like, the Cypress Hill Smokeout and things like that. So we've been to quite a few events now. We've never been to one in San Francisco, though. And we've never been with a big old group like you guys, too. So
we're going to be rolling deep. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's go to Jay Smoker. Jay, how did you get involved with writing with the Weed Blog and doing marijuana activism? Is it a medical thing, a recreational thing, just a thing?
Well, if you really want the long story, March of 2009, I ended up getting pulled over in the wrong state with some medicine. Let's put it that way.
I've been in that state.
Yeah, so California, Tehama County, evil, and ended up doing some time there for, you know, I didn't get convicted of anything, but because of just the complications and a week in jail and lawyer and everything.
Yeah, because you're waiting to get bailed out and there's arraignments and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and at first they had me on there in six-figure bail, which is a joke. So I got out of jail on that, and you know, I walked away with no convictions because of the, you know, I was medical from Oregon, but it still ruined my life, and you know, I lost my job, lost my car, lost my house. I mean, it cost me $15,000-$20,000 to get out of all of it, and so ever since then, man, I moved back to Oregon after that, and reconnected with this guy, and we've known each other for a long time, and he likes to write, and so we just kind of got together, and we would sit around and have these good conversations, and finally we're like, let's do this.
Right on. Yeah. Well, you know, your story is the one that I always tell, not yours specifically, but this story is the one I always tell whenever the prohibitionist comes out and says, well, you know, we don't really lock anyone up for marijuana. They're all there for tougher crimes than that. You know, no one's really there for simple possession. It's like 0.3% or whatever. And I always say, well, sucks for them, but it's not the imprisonment that's the worst part of it. It's like you said, 15 grand out of your life. Job lost, home lost. What was your job background? What was your career up until that moment?
I was doing insurance, and you know, it kind of looks bad when you wear a shirt and tie to work to come into work or to have to. Yeah, I'm not going to be to work this week. I'm in jail, a 1,000 miles away. So it was kind of rough, but it is what it is. And you know, I mean, it fueled the fire and it burns.
So. Oh yeah, totally understand. let's go over now to Johnny and ask the same question. What brought you to being a blogger for theweedblog.com?
Well, I've been a fan of marijuana culture, marijuana industry, everything, all things marijuana for a long time. But I was actually sitting in a class at Western Oregon, oddly enough, political communications, and I heard about people blogging, and I thought, wow, man, the cannabis movement absolutely needs something like this, because I was thinking at the time, there's either people doing it and they're not doing it hardcore enough, or there's nobody doing it, and either way, I want to get in there and fill that void. And I have zero computer skills, really. I barely know how to turn on my computer. I know how to click really good, but other than that. And then when this guy relinked back up with me, we knew we had the right recipe. And so you combine that with just our never-ending desire to end marijuana prohibition and, you know.
So this is like the teamwork of IT guru and, you know, writer. Basically.
Yeah, yeah, because as I was saying, me and Wiz Calico over here went to Western Oregon, and I majored in public policy and minored in legal studies with pretty much the entire time, like, just hell-bent on marijuana law, marijuana case law, marijuana policy. Whenever I take, like, an administrative law class or a constitutional law class, I'd always search out those marijuana cases first. When I learned how to shepherdize cases, I'd always go straight to the marijuana cases first and stuff. So writing about it, I was actually kind of tuning up to go to law school, and I decided not to do that. And the blog just seemed kind of a natural transition to keep those writing skills honed.
Yeah, I know when I started this show, and it was just originally a 1 hour show, I'd get people that say, "Wow, you do a show every day. How do you find something to talk about, you know, for marijuana, you know, for an hour every day?" And now we're a 2 hour show, and I think we could fill three. There's so much. I mean, you guys are writing a ton of posts out there at theweedblog.com. As you go through these stories, I know Carrie often tells us, is like, there's some stories we won't even cover anymore, like dude got busted with a lot of weed. Yeah, happens all the time. What are some of the out of left field stories you've covered in Weed Blog where you went, whoa, I would have never thought I'd have seen a story so weird as far as marijuana or the cops or anything like that? Anything stand out?
The first thing that came to my mind was I one time wrote a story about a guy who lost a workers' compensation claim for getting mauled by a bear.
I saw that one.
Yeah, that one was kind of like weird because I guess I'll know those stories because I'm trying to figure out what category to put them in. I'm like, what?
Where does that fit?
Yeah, the bear mauling category doesn't exist on the Weed Blog right now, you know? We got to get more than one in order to necessitate a new category.
That's right. You can't have a category of just one.
Yeah.
And Jay, as far as your experience doing this and seeing what you see, you go to all these different events and such, any weird moments stick out?
Oh yeah, there's been lots of them. I mean, it's not even the weird. It's more like the moments that you feel like you made a difference. You know, like I remember we wrote a story about a guy who lost a job. It was another one of those touchy workers' comp cases.
Sure.
And we wrote the story. He wrote us an email, wrote us a story, and then we published a story, and then the New York Times called, and they ended up picking up the story and doing more with it. And, you know, the guy really was just stoked because he got his message out. I don't know if he ended up keeping his job or how it all panned out or whatever, but it's just good when you can feel like you're at least, like, influencing something out there, making some sort of difference.
Well, that's something that we, you know, the advantage we have at this time in history with the internet the way it is, still free and open, praise net neutrality, let's keep it, but that we finally have an outlet for our conversations, our facts, all of that. I mean, before, you know, pre-internet, trying to get even a newsletter out or an advertisement out about the truth about cannabis, you'd get rejected at every turn. Here on the internet, we can't get rejected. It's just we can freely post this kind of stuff. So as we move forward with this, we're speaking with Jay Smoker and Johnny Green from theweedblog.com, one of the internet's most popular sources for internet or for marijuana law reformers and the cannabis culture. As you move forward with the Weed Blog, what is the direction you want to take? Is it cannabis culture? Is it cannabis news? Is it the science of it, or all of the above?
Yeah, all of the above.
I've always looked at it as all of the above because, like, with activism, there's no way you could separate it from culture. You can't separate it from industry. You can't really separate it from anything. Anybody who thinks differently needs to look up their local marijuana laws, and then we could have that conversation, But also, with that being said, you know, I rarely come across somebody that likes cannabis that only likes the science or only likes the pictures or, you know, like most people that are into cannabis are cannabis nerds, you know, they're like, oh, wow, you learned how to, you know, roll a joint out of a freaking leaf off of a tree. How do you do that? Well, let's put it on YouTube or, you know, with some stupid laws coming around and we all got to rally around it and fight it or whatever, you know, so... I think what we've always said is we'll put a little bit of everything on our website, and if we don't have a category for it, we'll look into it.
So. All right. Well, we're going to hang out here for a little bit longer with Johnny Green and Jay Smoker from theweedblog.com. Other folks in the studio audience, Wiz Kaliko, Ganja John, and, Cannabis Carrie has left us. She had to get some errands done so she can get down here. For our trip to San Francisco, we're headed to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. Check out medcancup.com for more information. Stick around for hour two. We'll have more questions. We've got the full video of Jared Polis, Representative Jared Polis, grilling the DEA administrator, and more coming up here on Toker Talk Radio. You can also call us at 971-533-7111 or get into our chat room at ncr420.com. And don't forget, if you love this show, text Russ to 420-420. That's R-U-S-S to 420-420. It's a direct donation to the show. It helps keep us on the air, and we'd really appreciate it. For everybody here, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belleville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it.